Hello and welcome to the first episode of Forum GovTech Europe, the podcast that fosters the debate on the relationship between government and technology in Europe and beyond. I'm your host Simon, and today we will be talking to Joanna Bryson, who is Professor for Ethics and Technology at the Hertie School in Berlin. Her research focuses on the impact of technology on human cooperation and AI governance. From 2002 until 2019, she was on the computer science faculty at the University of Bath. She's also been affiliated with the Department of Psychology at Harvard University, the Department of Anthropology at the University of Oxford, and the Princeton Center for Information Technology Policy. Today we will discuss the regulation of emerging technologies such as artificial intelligence and tech policy in Europe. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did, and now without further ado, my conversation with Joanna. Hello, Joanna. Thank you very much for being here today. I am a very big fan of you and your work, and I'm honored to have you here as a first guest on this podcast. You are an expert in intelligence, both natural and artificial. You've done some incredible things in the past, and now you're working as professor for ethics and technology at the Hertie School. And you're also affiliated to the Hertie School's Center for Digital Governance. So my first question is, what do you do in your role as professor? What does the work of the center entail, and why does it matter?
Oh, that's really, that's pretty wild. You said I've done a lot of incredible things, but I honestly think being a professor of ethics and technology is quite incredible given my background. So basically, my PhD was in, you know, artificial intelligence and computer science, but I also have, I have 2 degrees in AI, but I have 2 degrees in psychology. And but I spent a lot of my when you become junior faculty, you're kind of let off the hook. You can write whatever you want, especially in Britain, especially in computer science. They're both tolerate eccentric. So I've been working a lot of the last 20 years working in sort of biological anthropology and a little bit in economics, behavioral economics and things. But I was, about a decade ago, people started realizing that AI was important. And so people started actually calling me into government meetings. It wasn't that I went out of my way for that, but some researcher decided I was a good person to talk to. And so then this was taking just increasing amounts of my time. And also there's this thing in life, which is called like relationships. And so my partner got a job on a different continent. And so I wound up cutting back to part-time. And then I was hardly ever home. I was actually then more able to go when governments asked me to talk to me and companies. I obviously talked to some companies too. So then how I could become a professor in the stuff that I was doing almost as a hobby, you know, it's kind of interesting. So I came here really, refusing to, I was turning down a lot of things. I said, I've got to learn what it is I am, you know, so I'm attending all these other meetings and all these other seminars, and I'm trying to make sure I actually know something about governance, and I know something about, I know how to program technology, but do I know it from a regulatory perspective? And it turns out that, yeah, you know, I can pick it up. It's great to have the resources of the Hertie School and the people who know what's going on. I'm actually one of the founding members of the Center for Digital Governance. And so that's a really strange place in some extent, because it's looking at two opposite things. And because they're so opposite that they inform each other. So on the one hand, some of us are looking at, and this is where I come in, but I'm not the only one, that they're looking at, how do we regulate the people who are doing digital technology? So actually, there's a lot of artificial intelligence, for example, in cars, and there hasn't been that much trouble with regulating that so far. I mean, if cars turn into another social media, which is kind of the way some people want to take them, then they might sort of go off the regulatory rails. But so I actually think the thing is that social media, search engines, those kinds of things didn't exist before. So there's sectors that are not well understood and certainly not well regulated and certainly are not paying enough tax right now, right? Not contributing sufficiently to the infrastructure and the well-being of the people that they need in order to to do their business, so they should be wanting to support. So that's my half, but actually more the bigger half and the director are looking at how do you take this technology and improve governance. So they're much more working in like public administration and governments. But so anyway, that's what I'm a member of. I've already been made an affiliate also with the Fundamental Rights, and from the perspective of ethics, that's like, I don't know, like 2 years ago, the people who do human rights and fundamental rights, again, they started noticing that AI was one of these things, and they're just going, what are you guys talking about, ethics? You know, we've been working on this thing for 70 years. We have an international consensus. And most of us ethics people went, oh, cool, okay. You know, so now I was still flattered to be invited to affiliate with the Center for Fundamental Rights. So I'm an affiliate of that too. And I attend a lot of the other meetings also. So I've found it really cool to be in this context. So what I'm doing since I got here, it's been COVID. I was actually supposed to be doing some robot work, but I couldn't. I've been working on looking at, I was trying to work on this problem of how do you recognize if someone's behaving anti-competitively within a market? When do you recognize? How do you measure like market domination? And are those concepts even coherent? And do they apply in when you have a sector where it makes sense that you could be selling your stuff to the whole world, right? So it isn't that companies are necessarily getting ahead by dirty tricks, although sometimes they do dirty tricks. But even if they don't do dirty tricks, one country could sell to the entire world, right? Except for inside the Great Firewall of China.
So one of the aims of this podcast is to make topics like GovTech, AI policy, or digital governance more accessible to people in Europe. And you are an expert in the regulation of artificial intelligence. You've worked with governments, corporations, and NGOs on AI policy. So the next question is, why does AI need to be regulated in the first place? In which areas is regulation really necessary? And in which areas could it be redundant?
Right. Okay. Well, so that's an interesting question. If you talk to companies, they argue like, oh, we don't need to be regulated. And that's just like the most bizarre argument, because actually what does regulation even mean? You know, again, coming from the biological perspective, regulation is just keeping yourself going. It's perpetuating some version of yourself into the future. Right. So we all need to, that's like breathing is regulation, right? So we all need to be regulated to some extent, and of course, we mostly self-regulate, right? And then there's this other thing, which is governing. Well, what is governing? It's actually conscious, it's deliberate, it's written down. And even for companies, we can think of sort of conscious, like what the C-suite knows about, and unconscious. You know, so governance coming from the top down, and regulation that's happening because there's that one person who actually, you know, backs up all the computers, and the government and the C-suite doesn't even know you need to do that or something, right? So it isn't just in an organism, but in a company, you can think about that. Okay, so now the real question they're trying to say is, do we want governments to be regulating us, right? And again, there is no part of the planet, maybe, you know, bits where there's been state failure, but basically in theory, the entire planet, there's some nation that's responsible this is coming back to human rights, right? Every nation is responsible for the human rights of every human inside of its borders, okay? So of course, every company already exists in a regulatory framework. They're already regulated. And most of the regulation they're getting, most of the governance they're getting is upregulation. They're mostly being handed huge amounts of money and tax breaks and everything else because everybody wants a digital sector. So it's insane for them to say no regulation. The main question is, what do we need to do? Do we need to specialize regulation a little more? And so I hinted at that with the answer to my first question. One indication is the giant market capitalization that's attached to a few of these organizations, which sort of indicates that something is going wrong. That's an indicator of redistribution isn't working, power dynamics are failing, and we're getting into a problem there. So I think that there that we need regulation in the context of, you know, it's being called the digital tax. I don't think that's the right name. I think it's more about better understanding transnational redistribution. I think it's similar. We could be talking about pharma. We could be talking about finance. We could be talking about airplanes, you know, because there's certain kinds of things that you could have the entire world as your market. And so then how do you handle that? And so I think that that's one aspect of it. Another aspect is just that the governments didn't know that they could be applying the other regulations that they had better. Okay, so they didn't understand that software is a manufactured output, right? They weren't thinking of it as a product, and they weren't applying product liabilities as they probably should have been. They thought, and the company said, well, hey, our software provides a service. Well, yeah, okay, the software provides a service, but the company produces a product, which is the software that is providing the service, right? So there's still a product there, and you can still be negligent. You can still fail to follow due process, and you can be criminally negligent, or you could deliberately conduct yourself in a way that is against the law, right? So we need to have enough expertise, and so this again is a different kind of, you know, governance regulation that not creating new laws that you have to operate in, but creating the laws that structure the government such that they can go out and check, you know, that they can audit for due diligence and that they can enforce, right? And there's a huge problem with enforcement here too, because how do you enforce at a scale with companies that have so much wealth? How do you enforce at a scale that that benefits, you know, that has any kind of behavioral expediency? So these are the questions which, like, you called me an expert, and I think I am, as long as you are talking about relative to other people, because there isn't expertise in this. That's the point. We're still inventing it, I apologize. I was late for this because I was in a different meeting where we were having this really interesting conversation about whether you can talk about a monopoly when there's like six GAFA, right? But are they each monopolies? Are they some kind of weird oligarchy? What is going on there? Because they are normally a monopoly is one company doing something wrong. But so how could five doing something wrong? That doesn't sound like a monopoly, right? And it sounds like a regulatory failure. But if the five are operating in concert, then regulation isn't going to help. They could even use regulation to try to get out of their responsibilities, which was something I didn't know until 2 hours ago. So there you go.
Very interesting. And maybe to, rightly connected to this point, what do you think about the upcoming US presidency of Joe Biden in terms of tech policy? Do you think that we're going to see a change in the way that the United States is handling these big tech corporations? Like, there was a lot of talk about breaking apart Facebook or maybe Google even in the future. Do you think this is actually going to happen, or do you think that it's not so likely?
I think America has a lot of problems right now. And this is only part of it. So the level of when you have this high level of inequality, then you get very, very high political polarization. And it isn't, I was a huge admirer of Obama. I voted for him twice, but it isn't because of social media. The polarization is being reflected on social media, and it can be steered, and, you know, there's various things you can do with social media, but, you know, it happened in the early 20th century as well, when you allow inequality to run away like this. And so we are going to have to get on top of some of our friends. I mean, they're my friends too. A lot of my friends actually understand this. A lot of my friends say, hey, we don't want, you know, to be, you know, written out of existence, but we understand something has to change. And so if we're talking about actually, if you level the playing field a little bit, you actually increase the probability that those guys can maintain their rank orders, right? It's one of the ironies is that in the period of inequality, there's huge distance between people, but random stuff can really happen because individuals have so much power, you know, and so you're actually improving your own, not only the rest of the world, but also even for yourself, the stability of your context. It's like the difference between governing in a democracy or in an autocracy, that in a democracy, you can, believe it or not, move in and out of power, and nothing very bad normally happens to you. Whereas in an autocracy, that people are terrified of losing power, and then everybody they know getting thrown into jail. So normally that the problem in a well-functioning democracy is not a problem. Let's just put it that way. So I think you can't separate out, I don't know what they're going to do. I'm a fan of Warren, but I don't know if she's right about all this stuff. But I think they've got so many other problems to solve. I don't think this is the first thing they should be addressing, although it might be a part of the package of what they need to be doing.
Okay, that's a very interesting perspective, actually. I haven't heard that so much in this debate, so that's quite interesting. And a lot of people associate a technologized government with an autocratic government in general. For me, a clear example for this is Clearview AI in the US as like loss of control of the institutions over the technology and how it can be used. And another question I have is, what can we as citizens do in order to avoid the misuse of governmental technology, and how can we integrate technology into our society in a democratic fashion?
Yeah, so I think, again, I think that the technology, it alters the playing field, but the fundamental questions are political here, right? So I would not say that the Chinese are more surveilled than the Americans. I just wouldn't say that. In fact, those Americans are maybe better surveilled because it's being done by commercial entities that really just that their reward function is money. If you're in China, the reward function is authoritarian power, and so people are afraid to tell the authorities what they don't want to hear, and so you don't necessarily wind up with the most correct data in those contexts. You tend to get to hear what you want to hear, which isn't necessarily what you actually want on the meta level. So the point is that there's technology is pervasive. There's that Europe is also, we're not talking about Europe very much, and we should. I mean, and that goes back to what I don't think this is a problem for America to solve. I don't think right now their democracy is strong enough to solve a problem of this scale. I think they need help, and I think Europe has to be the ones that solve the problem, and then that might help America get on top of the problem too. I think that, but also Europe. I don't think we have a good context about exactly how much information is there, and basically, let me tell you something. I have two passports. I have a British and an American passport. I have an American accent. I grew up there, right? But the British, they have almost the same language, but they're culturally like the opposites, right? So America, at least in the Midwest, super direct, super honest, whatever. It's like an insult if you don't tell someone exactly what you're thinking. The British are the other way around. The British are like you have to be thinking very carefully about what you say, and you have to think about how the other side is feeling. And so what would be patronizing in America is polite in Britain. So anyway, my polite mother-in-law, she said at some point, she was surprised that my relatives were, oh, this is getting a little bit risque, but my relatives were upset that I was living with my partner. And she's like, but academics, students often live in mixed gender households. And so that was all that mattered to her. The appearances, like, oh, this is normal from the outside. And then at the door, your knowledge of what happens inside ends. And now, what was that got to do with anything? I think that's what we're sort of experiencing in Europe. I think that data is around, even though it's illegal, and we try really hard to kind of whack it out, whack-a-mole, make sure people don't have it. It's not being expressed because it's illegal to retain it, right? And I think we shouldn't think that we're so free here that therefore there's no data about us, or we're not in a digitized society. I think that data is around, and things could turn on a dime if we lose the wrong government or whatever. All these capacities could be expressed. And so that's why I'm working at governance school. I think the most important things we can do now is keep control of our governments and use our governments to keep control of the other forces, to provide security. So I don't think it's separable anymore. And I don't think, I mean, it's slightly possible we could, I still think it's, there's, yeah, in the 40 years that I might still be alive, I wouldn't be totally astounded if we hit a post-digital era, but I also think it's quite likely we could be in a digital era for thousands of years. Um, so, So I think that either of those things are possible, and we need to prepare for both. So you can see I still have books just in case, because I don't want all records to be completely mutable and deletable. But at the same time, I'm working in a governance school to try to make sure that we can govern.
Very good. Yeah, that's a very good approach. Maybe now, shifting the focus towards Europe a bit. A lot of people in Germany and Europe in general claim that the EU should focus less on regulating emerging technologies and more on removing bureaucratic barriers that hinder the creation of new technologies and companies in Europe. And you say that Europe can be an AI champion without big tech companies, but by seizing its influence as norm promoter through the projection of regulatory frameworks like the GDPR on a global scale.
Wait, I said that?
If I understood correctly, like that through these regulatory standards, basically Europe can be a norm promoter and show how these technologies can be regulated.
I think what I just said was that we could be innovating in government and governance and redistribution, and that we, through that, we might help stabilize America and China and Russia. They're all worried, right? Because they should be worried, because this is a highly unstable era while we have this level of inequality. So there's reasons for them to be worried. The point is that Europe could be expanding. We got on top of a very unstable situation, and we could help others do the same. And we can continue doing this innovation leadership in this area. That is not the same as being an AI leader. Now, I actually also think that we're leading in the digital economy. And I think that even the GDPR, if you look at it, everybody complains about the bits that are about like, oh, you can't keep private data. But that piece of legislation was massively about making it easier to do digital work. And if you go to like Greece or you go to Austria, their economies have transformed in just 10 years. So we are booming. We are booming, and nobody notices because they all look at these underregulated spaces. They had these giant corporations that it isn't even in their interest. I mean, Google should disaggregate. If they disaggregated like Hewlett Packard, they'd be worth more money. But the thing is that they stay together, I think, because of this screwed up market capitalization situation and the political power they're getting that way. But ideally, we would have more of a continuum if we get back more on a level playing field. And I think you would find that actually the strength and the innovation, it is happening here. It didn't used to happen as much. We are getting better at it. There's still some parts that are better than others in Europe for setting up new companies and actually, I heard it's really a funny thing. I was in Cluj in Romania last year, back when we travel. I got talked into going to this thing, and it turned out to be amazing. But anyway, apparently, you're in New York City. You scrape together like $30,000 because you have an idea, and you don't have that much money. You don't have huge backers. So you scrape together $30,000. You go to Cluj. And you sit there and you code your thing, and you can probably even hire people or whatever. You can live there for a couple of years on $30,000. In New York, that's like 2 days, right? So then when you get to the point where you want to hire some people above the board, not just like get some people to do some programming, you want to get a company like 3 to 5 people, maybe up to 10, you move from Cluj to Berlin. Why? Well, it costs more to live in Berlin, but the government's honest. So nobody wants to stay and go to a company in Romania because there's too much corruption. And what I hear. Then you come to Berlin, you grow your company, you show your product, whatever. And then you move to America to cash in because you're in an under-regulated space and you can make enormous amounts of money and sell your company to Google and start it all over again or whatever you want to do, right? That's sort of, and so we have to look at, well, how can we make it so that more people do want to stay in Romania and Bulgaria? And like, can we reduce the corruption there? And because they're beautiful, beautiful countries, great quality of life in theory, if you can move around the corruption, right? And the same thing for Germany. How can we make it so that people think, actually, it's pretty cool. I would like to grow my company in Germany. And some people do. I mean, you, like I said, there's those people, those New Yorkers who do that thing. Route to California from New York, right? But there are some great companies. It's not just Skype and Nokia. There's Booking.com. Is Cloudflare here? I forget where Cloudflare is. I run into Cloudflare here. There's a lot of great companies here. And if you go to the meetings, you'll meet those guys. And a lot of companies, this is fine for them. And that's the point. I think you actually have a richer, more agile, a more innovative situation with a network of SMEs than you do with a few large companies that are breaking your democracy. You know, how is that?
That's true. Yeah, and also very interesting what you mentioned about Greece. No one is talking about Greece. Like 10 years ago, it was this failed economy in Europe. It was being rescued by the IMF, and now they're doing actually quite good, and they have a well-functioning digital economy compared to other countries in Europe, and no one is really talking about this, which I'm
The only reason I know about Austria is because they were the head of the EU, like, I don't know,
yeah,
a few things ago.
The council presidency.
Yeah, and they had me come and talk, and then someone said, I said something in German, which astounds anyone if somebody British or American says something in German. And they said, I lived here in 2007 to 2009, and they said, oh, you wouldn't know how it changed. So that's how I found out. Nobody talks about the Austrian Revolution, but you know, it went from literally when I was there, the main market was basically tourism. It was the arts, right? It was like a quarter of people in Vienna worked in that. And now it's digital. Digital is completely dominating for Austria as a whole. And then it just like, this is like a month ago, I just saw somebody smart. It was the Greece, one of their MPs that was in charge of their digital something or another. And he was just super smart. So we got in a chat and he told me, oh, you know, we've gone through this whole transformation. Otherwise I would not know. And I read the newspapers, you know? So you're right. It's not being talked about enough. Yeah, that should be something we bring in when we're talking about this false narrative of like this AI Cold War that we're going to be squished in between the two super giants. No.
That's true. Maybe Americans are just better at marketing what they do and telling people about it.
Well, yeah, maybe the America has an 18th century democracy and they have world leading. And I think we can't ignore this. They do have world leading things like Harvard and medicine.
Definitely, yeah.
And various things. But then they have like 40 million people with no health insurance, right? And so you do have to say, well, how much of what we do benefits from the innovations that are developed in those elite institutions, while the rest of Americans, I mean, those are even American citizens, let alone all the illegal aliens or whatever that are being treated even worse, right? So this we are benefiting from the innovations discovered in those highly unequal societies, which again is a reason. But it's easier. We all have a cognitive load issue. So it's all easier to talk about Google and Apple and whatever. Like I said, I meet these guys at meetings and I still can't remember the names of their companies, but I see them thriving. I know they're smart and I know that their products are around. Oh, I know another one like that, Graphcore. Graphcore is no longer in the EU because it's in Britain. Well, who knows how long it'll stay in Britain. But anyway, they make chips that do parallel concurrent stuff, which is of course big for computer games, but also for AI. So, you know, we have all kinds of stuff here and people just don't realize it. And partly because it's big and complicated and nobody has metrics for that kind of thing. So that's actually one of the things I've been trying to do since I've been here. We're trying to talk about getting better metrics.
Yeah. And it's also very new, I guess, that there's not like an institutional narrative created around this. It's still like in the making and a lot of people are shaping it at all.
It's not clear it's the kind of thing that lends itself to narrative, incidentally. I mean, look at novels. They're realistic, you know? Like, if you watch a movie, you're going to know. I mean, directors are good at this. Like, whoever the one person this the movie is actually about, that person's going to jump out at you on the screen, and it's never going to seem strange. But, you know, the beginning of the movie, there's probably 100 people there, and you're never going to hear most of their stories, you know? You're going to be lucky if the partner of the main character is actually portrayed as a human, you know? I just think, in a way, narrative is letting us down here. And so sometimes we have to use other kinds of metrics, not only narratives.
Yeah, well, it's good that we're kind of doing our bits to change the European narrative when it comes to this. Maybe like...
That's right. Congratulations on your new podcast thing, right?
Yeah, thank you. All right. Maybe then last question. Tech or AI policy has gotten a lot of attention in the last years. A lot of people want to build a career in this domain. What would you tell young politics, law, or engineering students who are interested in this topic and want to develop a career in this domain? What do you think are the crucial problems that lie ahead of us? And yeah, in terms of regulating emerging technology.
Oh, well, for sure. I think I would tell them to come to Hardy School. I think that I mentioned before that if you, first of all, realize that you can have a good living, and it's about choices, but you can have a good living in various forms of public service, including being an academic, but including working for the government. So figure out what you want to do. Don't put yourself into some burn rate where you have to have like some super expensive apartment or whatever that forces you into a particular kind of job. And then look at the kinds of things that you can do. There's some, and we were talking earlier about Algorithm Watch. They like invented themselves. They saw that there was a need to see how people are using algorithms. I also really think there's going to be a need, and governments think this too, and they'll be hiring up on this thing about going, so again, if you're a computer scientist or whatever, that you could go out and learn how to audit code. I mean, anyone should, with a computer science degree, ought to be able to practice decent DevOps. And so they also ought to be able to go and see if other people have practiced decent DevOps. So it's just an interesting career alternative there. Yeah, I don't know as much about for the law and everything, but I meet a lot of smart and useful people that work for the European Commission and that work for the German government since I live in Berlin now. So, you know, and when I was in Bath, the Bath City Council had some interesting innovation, which is all going to heck now because of Brexit and the lack of money. But, you know, a lot of it was voluntary that people were, the tech community in Bath were contributing to the public good. They had meetups in the evenings, and they would put together hackathons or just write code to address needs for citizens. It just the people from the government would say, hey, look, we have this data, and people would be, cool, what can we do with that? And that was just how they spent their spare time, you know? So I think there's so many things you can do. There's so many ways to get engaged. I guess the main thing is just to decide that, you know, I play computer games a little tiny bit, but, you know, mostly just that there's other things to do with your free time as well as with your career. So just think very holistically.
Perfect. I think that's perfect ending for this. I would wrap it up here. Thank you very much for taking the time, Joanna.
Well, thanks for the honor of making me your first interview.
Thank you very much for listening to this conversation. In case you enjoyed it, please rate our show on iTunes and make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform. We will produce more content with relevant stakeholders from the European GovTech ecosystem. If you'd like to come on the show, feel free to contact us on social media. Until next time, Simon.